Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 4th at 10:26 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like this time, Iran and the U.S. will actually reach a deal to end the war. This time, let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who look for your votes and support. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, we go back in history for our Snollygoster of the Week award. Way back in history. Not even U.S. history. But first, I'm back. I had a couple of weeks off. My wife and I went to Ireland, where we experienced great scenery, history, lovely people, tasty food, a healthy bit of Guinness, and the full range of Irish weather. We had rain, we had wind, we had temperatures in the 30s, we had sun, we had temperatures in the 70s. It was wonderful. What we avoided? Politics. Oh, we just got away from politics and the nonstop coverage of Donald Trump. I highly recommend that when you go on vacation. Turn off the TV, the phone, the radio, the podcast feed, and get away. So anyway, now we're back and it's time to catch up. Here in Ohio, the TV ad war between U.S. Senator John Husted and his Democratic challenger Sherrod Brown is heating up. Mike DeWine, who supported a big tax break for data centers, has killed that same tax break, at least temporarily. The governor did that after it came out. The tax break is costing the state a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And then there is the fight against fraud, which suddenly is top of mind for Republicans here in Ohio and across the country. For these topics, we turn to our panel discussion from WOSU-TV's Columbus on the Record. We are joined by reporter Sarah Donaldson from Ohio Public Radio, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and Democratic strategist Stanley Gates. We will start with Ohio's fight against fraud. Now, for weeks, Governor DeWine has faced criticism from his fellow Republicans over allegations of widespread fraud in the state's Medicaid system. It started with a report in the conservative outlet Daily Wire, which accused home health agencies of fraudulently billing the system that pays for health care for low-income and disabled people. House Speaker Matt Huffman said the DeWine administration was not doing enough to prevent fraud. DeWine released a list of steps he is taking to address the allegations. They include a moratorium on new home health care companies accepting Medicaid reimbursements in Ohio. He also proposed using electronic monitoring to verify home health care workers' visits and other things. The nation's top Medicare and Medicaid official, Dr. Mehmet Oz, recently visited Ohio. He defended DeWine, but said Ohio needs to do more to prevent fraud. He says it needs more safeguards.
Sarah Donaldson, that report in the Daily Wire raised a lot of questions. But do we know exactly or even have a ballpark idea of how much fraud is out there?
I don't think we do, Mike. I mean, you know, the Daily Wire reports a number. Of course, Republican Representative Mike Davila has been talking about Medicaid fraud for more than a year. He has put out some numbers, but I don't know that we have this neat, wrapped in a bow figure. I don't think anyone in the press corps, politician on the right or the left, is disputing that there's some level of fraud, like there is in any other public benefits system. But I don't know that we have a perfect picture on what that looks like here.
Now, Terry, the DeWine administration points out they've had many, many prosecutions and got back, they've found a lot of millions of dollars in fraud that they have uncovered over the past 3 years. So they are investigating it, but he's still getting grief for not doing enough.
Well, part of the problem is this isn't just Medicaid. There's also a lot of other things dealing with nursing homes, unemployment compensation, SBA loans. And the problem is the federal government, I think one of the things that's really driven this big and higher is post-COVID, the federal government, including Congress, both sides, were wanting to shovel the money out so quick that people realize all this free money, the rules are loose, we can get it. And so definitely there's more to be done. And another problem one of the top state officials told me is a lot of times the local prosecutors here in Franklin County, unless it's more than $50,000, they don't want to bother prosecuting. The feds, the U.S. Attorney's Office, unless it's a $500,000. So clearly there's more to be done and a lot of cleaning up to done. But part of it is the federal government's fault because we got so many different programs, so many different rules and different departments. The Labor Department, how they handle things versus HHS are different. So yes, there's a problem. It isn't all one ethnic group as some claim, but it's a big problem and it needs to be cleaned up.
The issue involves a waiver that allows individuals to charge the Medicaid system for help for folks who want to stay in their home, like housekeeping and, you know, homemaking care and personal care. It seems like that it's the intention is good, keep people in their home, Stanley, keep them from having to go to expensive nursing homes, but you can see how that could open the door for fraud.
Yeah, and also, you know, you got to think about it, too. This is also going to hurt trust in the system. And so these are folks who depend on Medicaid. These are seniors, disabled folks, folks who are really in a vulnerable situation. And so I think accountability matters. But at the same time, we're talking about trust. And so how do we make sure that we're improving the system at the same time? But I think what folks want to hear is how we're going to make sure we keep folks accountable. How are we going to allow these seniors and folks who are disabled to be able to protect their dignity without compromising the values and overcorrecting so much where we're punishing those same folks too?
It seems like this Daily Wire story focused on basically the Somali community. They focused on the northeast corner of Columbus, of Franklin County. It sort of follows what happened in Minnesota with the Somali community there, right, Stanley? Is they being unfairly targeted?
I mean, I completely think so. I mean, you know, this is something that's happening in all states. However, this is something that's being very targeted to a certain population. If we're going to make sure that we're targeting it, I think everybody agrees, let's prosecute the fraud, but also let's make sure that the folks that, again, that we're talking about are able to live in some kind of dignity, too.
This has become an issue in the governor's race. Both Amy Acton and Vivek Ramaswamy are critical of what the state has done. They've got a kind of a plan, not many details on how they're going to combat fraud, Sarah.
Yeah, and you've seen that. I mean, both of them have talked on different issues where it's always, you know, we have concepts of a plan, but maybe not that solidified plan quite yet. But, of course, again, with the focusing in on the Somali immigrant community, that has been going on for months. There were widespread, at times unproven, allegations of daycare fraud. And again, the governor's office has kind of taken a lot of the blame here. And you've heard Republicans say, well, we shouldn't point fingers. We need to just move forward and fix it. But of course, this is all happening under a Republican administration, and Republicans have been in power for decades in this state.
Well, I differ with you a little bit. That's the spin from the Democrat Party that's all Republicans' fault. But they forget during the 4 years of Joe Biden and other times Democrat presidents, a lot of these rules were written out of D.C. as far as what you can do and what you can't do. And clearly one of the things that's, I think, important now is people are realizing if we can do some things like Tennessee is doing, where it gives incentive to the state to recapture more of the stolen or fraudulent money or just one community. And there is, again, in the whole medical system, the nursing care system, there's a lot of legal theft, there's illegal theft, but clearly when it's billions and billions of dollars in Ohio, it needs to be tightened down.
But don't you think that at least the Ramaswamy campaign is distancing itself from Mike DeWine? I can't say that
they've got a plan, and they've actually detailed the plan as far as how they would crack down on what they want. And the fact that Dr. Oz came here and seemed somewhat friendly to give an Ohio some tools to better deal with it and ramp things up, that's important.
But I do think, to your point, Sarah, you know, at the end of the day, these are Republicans who are also pointing fingers at Republicans and saying, this is the issue. I mean, Ramaswamy camp came out, Speaker Huffman, McCauley also came out and pointed the finger right at DeWine. And again, I think these are folks who have been running the state for decades at this point, and voters are going to wonder and ask whose fault and who's to blame.
Well, is this also a distraction from inflation and high gas prices by Republicans, especially targeting Minnesota. They went all after Minnesota, which is a Democratic governor up there with Tim Walz, and they weren't blaming the federal government. They were all the blame went to Tim Walz up there. It's a way to distract folks from, you know, $5 a gallon gas and potatoes and ground beef, it's expensive.
I don't think it's quite that sinister the way it's done, but a key issue has been identified. And again, this isn't $10 or $12 million. This is billions and billions and billions, because people don't realize so much of the state budget is pass-through money, particularly of Medicaid. And if you can tighten it down by 10 or 15%, that's real money.
All right. Ohio law exempts tech companies from paying state sales taxes on materials and equipment used to build data centers. In last year's budget, lawmakers wanted to end the tax break. They voted to do that, but Governor DeWine vetoed that provision, so the tax break continued. Last week, Signal Ohio reported that tax break cost the state about $1.5 billion last year. That's 11 times more than state officials predicted. This week, Governor DeWine temporarily paused the tax break. A special committee of lawmakers continues its study on the cost and benefits of data centers in Ohio. Stanley Gates, you know, the argument is these data centers bring a lot of jobs, construction jobs and then spillover jobs after they're built, tech companies moving nearby. But $1.5 billion is a lot of money.
And someone needs to be held accountable for that. That is a big oversight at the end of the day. And again, you know, as we just talked about the previous topic, someone needs to be held accountable for this. That is a very big amount of things that could have went towards schools, capital projects, and folks are going to wonder, where is that return on investment that taxpayer dollars went towards, and how are we going to make sure that we fix that? And so I think that we're going to see that. This is going to become a kitchen table issue. There's already a petition going around about data centers, and I think that this is going to make folks think twice about that.
Now, the DeWine administration argues, Terry, that they didn't see the rapid growth of data centers in 2025 versus 24.
Well, there clearly needs to be some tightening because this is so new and it's so fresh, but people forget a couple little factors. 36 other states have similar kind of sales tax exemptions on the equipment that's put in these centers. So Ohio can tighten and should tighten, but then also going back to the Kasich administration, some of the big four, including Amazon, already got back then exemptions. So there's definitely tightening then. But in some ways, this is money that if we didn't have the data centers, that money wouldn't have come in anyway, because this is because of new things coming in. So clearly there is tightening, there is going to be tightening, but it's all part of the debate. How do we tighten down? How do we keep Ohio competitive but get the jobs?
So is the DeWine administration, they just said it's just growth? Because it goes from $100,000 to $1.6 billion is a lot.
Well, the DeWine administration didn't really point to much beyond the fact that it said that the data center joint committee that the legislature has formed is studying the issue, and he thinks it needs to be put on pause while they study that issue. I should note that Governor DeWine has been very supportive of this tax exemption. Mm-hmm. Lawmakers tried to get rid of it in the budget last year, and DeWine vetoed that effort.
How could he? I'm not a lawyer, but how can he just say we're not going to give them this tax break for, you know, a month or 2 months or 6 years.
Some of the tax breaks are already baked in that he can't.
It's only new tax breaks.
It's generally smaller data centers, not your big four, the Amazons, the Facebooks. So, again, there's a lot of details. But we also forget the state of Ohio in the last month found they've got an extra $1.2 billion that came in because income tax collections and sales tax are higher. So some of the data centers are driving more income tax collections, because in the construction field, the construction trades are very pro data centers because it's provided thousands of jobs and millions of dollars.
DeWine's office says that the companies that received the tax break invested $27 million in Ohio last year. So $27 billion for $1.6 billion in tax break. That's a pretty good deal, right, Stanley?
It's a pretty good deal until you continue to look at the rest of the recipe. You know, I think that there are a lot of things that are baked in. As soon as you start thinking about utility costs, also, you know, water, the local aspect of this too. And so the property tax abatements that are happening, and now schools and funding are also being threatened. I mean, I think that those are things that people should continue to ask questions about as well too.
And there's a thing called spin-off jobs. If you talk to the New Albany mayor, as I have, it might be this one center might only produce 75 full-time jobs, but then constantly you've got in and out tradespeople, electricians, other experts that way coming in to do repairs, do installations. So it's hard to gauge the full impact, but it's definitely a lot of money. And I'd rather have Ohio prepared and on track for the 21st century than sitting back hoping the big auto plants come back, which are not going to come back the way they used to.
I do just want to level set, though. This tax break has been around for almost a decade. These are not new facilities.
Yeah,
these facilities have been coming in for years. So you hear from folks like Republican Speaker Matt Huffman who say maybe when they were new, this tax break made sense. But why are they getting a tax break when every other manufacturing facility that's building in Ohio is not?
And that's the tightening that needs to happen and I think will happen, but hopefully they'll take the time to do it smartly so you still get the jobs, get more money, but make it all work.
Democrats, they're reluctant to criticize these data centers because there are union folks building them, union folks, you know, maintaining the electrical systems. So this is not really a partisan issue to some degree, right, Stanley?
No, this is not a partisan issue at all. I mean, I think folks have been asking that question over the past year, especially as it's starting to happen all across the state, but also locally again. And so I think that, you know, this is not a partisan issue by any means. I think people are now just starting to look at numbers like this where you have $1.5 billion that are missed. How are we going to make sure that we're not continuing to how do we make sure that we're giving economic development but not a corporate check at the same time? Blank check.
Yeah. The television ad battle in the Ohio U.S. Senate race is ramping up. Based on the ads, it looks like both campaigns are fishing for what issues will resonate most with voters. John Huston's ad goes after Sherrod Brown for being weak on the border, driving up the cost of living, supporting boys in girls' sports, and for accepting donations from Jeffrey Epstein Associates. Brown's ads go after Husted for not doing enough to lower prices and for accepting money from Epstein Associates and for voting against the release of the Epstein files. Husted first voted against releasing the files in September, but then voted to release them in November after President Trump agreed to it. Terry Casey, what issues are going to matter the most to voters in this campaign?
Well, ultimately, it's the economy. Jim Carville said it well, it's the economy, stupid. There was a former governor, Jim Rhodes in Ohio, who'd slam a wallet on the table in front of Ronald Reagan in 1980 and told him it's all about what goes in the wallet and what comes out of the wallet. So ultimately, it'll be the economy. The difficult thing is you've got Husted, who's the incumbent there, but you've got Sherrod Brown, who was in Congress for 30-some years, including during the Biden years when inflation was 20 to 25%. So both of them have an incentive to try and distract on other things, but I'm not sure the Epstein connections, both of them have gotten money from associates of Epstein and other people that are questionable, but does that really work? So we're still searching to see how much is the economy and who has the right answers.
Why don't they just say it's Les Wexner or Abigail Wexner, associates of Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, the Sherrod Brown ads featured Wexner being deposed and talking about it and tying it all in. But I'm not sure whether it's going to connect that well because, like Sherrod Brown, he not only got lots of Wexner money, tens of thousands of dollars, but he also's got money from people like Harvey Weinstein, who's actually been a convicted sex offender. So they can throw back the guilt by association. I'm not sure it works either way because I think Ohioans are interested in other issues right now.
I would completely agree with that. I don't think that it's going to sell much. I mean, I think that it's a great start, but I think in November when people go to the ballot, the first thing they're going to be thinking about is how am I going to pay for my groceries? How am I going to get to work? And also, what's my health care going to look like? They're not going to necessarily be interested in this topic that much.
So why are we seeing the ads? Why are we seeing Epstein being prominently displayed on these ads? And is it just trying to muddy up your opponent or deflect from him? Because John Huston did vote at first to block the files, release of the files, and then voted to release them after Trump said, okay, go ahead and release them. But so he's trying to maybe deflect from that. What's going on here, Sarah?
Well, I mean, Ohio has shifted redder and redder. Ohio is a Republican state, and I think Democrats especially took note of the fact that there were some folks, especially on the far right, who did break with Trump on the Epstein issue. Now, that was several months ago, and of course, a lot has changed since then. There are a lot of issues that have risen to the top, namely the economy, that gas prices are very high because of the war in Iran. So I think it's kind of, I kind of look to it as like, you know, Democrats saw a win with abortion immediately following the overturning of Roe, and they clung really hard to abortion. That didn't really work the last time that Brown ran. So I mean, I think it's, you know, trying to throw it out there to see what other than the economy can we message on.
And Sherrod Brown was a powerful U.S. senator, chairman of one of the most important committees for 5.5 years from Epstein's death till he finished his term. Why didn't he push more for release of files then? And of course, part of it is those files are voluminous, complicated, And there's questions whenever you release any investigative law enforcement things, what's true, what's rumor, what's fact in there. But I think it'll ultimately get back to the economy.
Stanley, do you find it a bit ironic that Sherrod Brown, who spent 32 years in Washington, now labels John Houston, who's been there about a year and a half, as a Washington insider?
It is definitely ironic. However, I think, you know, when we look at the record, what Sherrod should be leading into is the fact that he is a Washington insider. I mean, you think about some of his accomplishments as it relates to pensions, labor, drug costs. I mean, those are things that he should lead into. Yes, you are a political insider, a Washington insider. That's actually your record. That's how you win this race as well in November.
I'm not sure being a Washington insider, Houston or Brown, is good to emphasize because people are mad at Congress and their lack of action on both sides on things.
I mean, I'd agree with that, but I think at the same time, people know when they see Sherrod Brown, they know what he's fighting for, they know his values, they know the dignity of work, and I think that that's what's going to ultimately matter in November, especially in this economy.
Washington insiders running against Washington, an age-old tactic. I wonder if it works. Anyway, my thanks to Democratic strategist Stanley Gates, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and reporter Sarah Donaldson from Ohio Public Radio. You can see what we all look like and catch every episode of Columbus on the Record online. Just visit the WOSU News channel on YouTube. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
This is Snollygoster. Coming up, our Snollygoster of the Week segment. But first, a favor. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you are using. It helps boost our listening. And don't forget to tap the follow button on your podcast app so you get every episode. All right. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. And as I said, we are going back in time and across the Atlantic for this week's Snollygoster of the Week. When I was in Ireland, I visited the Aran Islands off the West Coast, very remote, and our tour guide told the story about 19th century Irish property taxes imposed by Great Britain. In the early 1800s, the country taxed windows. If you had more than three windows in your house, you paid more in taxes, more in property taxes. And that's why, as you drive through remote parts of Ireland, Scotland, you see so many cottages with only three windows. Rural residents chose living in darkness over paying higher taxes. But they came up with a solution. They cut their front doors in half. And when the weather allowed, they could close the bottom half of the door to keep the sheep out and the children in, but open up the top half, giving them an extra window that was tax-free. Great Britain did not tax doors. That's why you see so many houses with half doors over there. That unpopular tax, it lasted 50 years before it was finally changed, I should point out. But it's pretty shrewd. For us in Ohio, dealing with and fighting over property taxes, this history is proof that debates over property taxes are not new, they are not unique to Ohio, and they are not easily solved. But for cutting their doors in half to avoid a tax on daylight, 19th century rural residents of Ireland get our Snollygoster of the Week award. Much delayed, but they so deserve it for their shrewd tactics. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.